Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's Lean Keys, Real Talk, back with another episode. I'm not sure of the number off the top of my head this time, but I'll get it to you in a few minutes. Anyways, Lee, what's good, bro? How you doing?
Man, another day, another way, man. It's a good day, bro. I'm glad we didn't do the show yesterday, but, hey, today's a good day.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad to hear that. You know, we couldn't get it together yesterday and last week. I know we missed last week for the people listening. I believe we missed last week. So,
we missed it.
Yeah, I at least missed it. So it's been. It wasn't really the type of card that we would really be going crazy over last week. That was one of the factors, but there was other stuff too. You know, I was busy and you were busy and that was just a little bit difficult to do. But for me, it feels like I haven't been on here in like 3 weeks, so I'm excited. One thing I want to get to right away, because this happened, you know, about a week or two ago, and it was during the time when we weren't on the air. I want to say that we made predictions a couple days before the Wednesday, you know, a couple days before the fight. But Sanhagen and Dillashaw, you know, we got to kick it off with Sanhagen and Dillashaw's fight. I feel like they had a really good fight. That, to me, in my opinion, that was probably the best fight I watched this year. That was probably the best fight I've watched in 2021. And that's, you know, that's with understanding that I don't watch every single UFC fight. I didn't see all the fights, so other people might have other picks for fights they thought were better. But for me personally, out of the fights that I have watched from the UFC this year, that was by far the best one. That was a straight banger. And that was the first time that I was on the edge of my seat for a fight. Like, I couldn't even, I was stressed out even looking away for a second. Like, I had to silence my phone. I couldn't even get up to the, kitchen to pour a glass of water. Like, I couldn't do anything. There was no bathroom break during that fight. Like, I was literally locked in for 25 minutes. I felt guilty even turning my head away from the screen. I couldn't even scratch my neck and turn my head away from the screen. I was, like, glued to the TV, man. What did you think about the fight?
Bro, that was an excellent fight, man. I thought I would have been happy with a draw. You know, I'm not a fan of draws, but I really wasn't mad about the scoring, although I had Sanhagen winning 3-2. But at the same time, man, TJ showed why he's a former champion. He came in there. He looked good. He fought through adversity. He had the cut on his eye. He was busted up pretty good, and he fought through it. I wasn't a fan of the holding on to Sanhagen's back and them basically scoring that for TJ, because I thought that was kind of weak. But at the same time, if the judge is giving it to you, do it. But, man, like you said, that was probably one of the best fights so far this year. Both guys went out there and put their skills on display. I was definitely disappointed in some of the things Sanhagen was trying. It was stuff that I'd never really seen him do before. The flying knee, I was cool with that, but the spinning back fist and the spinning attacks, I just wasn't a fan of that, especially when he had started to establish his jab and his punching, and he was lighting TJ up with his combinations. It's like, why would you do that? And it just took me back to when Chael Sonnen was fighting Anderson Silva, and he went in and tried that spinning thing that he tried to do, and he got the fight ended up turning right there and there, and Anderson Silva shortly after finished the show. But, I think TJ probably get the shot against Aljamain Sterling, Volkanovski. I mean, Peter Yan, and I'm not mad about that. My man Sanhagen probably going to have to probably win maybe one or two more fights. So maybe him and Rob probably they tussle. Or if TJ don't want to wait, maybe you get Dillashaw versus Rob Font, and you get Sanhagen somebody else. But overall, it was a great fight, and I thoroughly enjoyed both guys going in there doing their thing.
Yeah, so one thing about Sanhagen is he said in one of the post-fight interviews they did, he said, I think it was the post-fight press conference, he basically called out Dana and he said, no, I not called him out, I shouldn't say it like that, but he basically addressed Dana White and he said, I just need Dana White to promise me that I'm still one fight off from the title, so that loss didn't move him back to needing to win two fights, that he's still one fight, you know, that he's still one win away from a title shot. And if you ask me, I'm okay with that. You know, I think if he were to come back and, you know, get a win, I think he's right there to fight whoever's the champion by that point. That's perfectly okay with me.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, a lot of guys didn't want to, a lot of guys, how many guys actually look good against TJ in the octagon? Sanhagen actually looked good. I mean, I can't say he looked bad and he got outclassed. He just made some errors in the fight that a veteran fighter like TJ capitalized on. But we just need to see what they're going to do, man. TJ said he want to get back in there by the end of the year. So I'm thinking he'll probably do Wild Front. Then if he win that, then he'll do the winner of the Yan versus Aljo. And Sanhagen, hey, man, just take a little bit of time off, go back to the drawing board, and get to a fight before the end of the year. Keep it moving. But Dana White is never going to make a promise like that unless you're one of his boys or his girls, somebody he really likes. That's the only way he'll make a promise like that.
Well, I'll tell you this, right? I'll tell you this. One thing's fortunate about the 135ers and Corey Sanhagen and TJ Dillashaw, one thing is fortunate for both of those guys, especially Sanhagen wanting to be, you know, one fight off. This pay-per-view this weekend, we're actually getting some of the top guys from 135. There's actually two pretty high-level 135 fights happening on the card. So you have Pedro Munhoz's fight and Pedro Munhoz is fighting Jose Aldo. I think they're like number three and number five or something like that. And then you have, I want to say, is the Murad? No, is that on this card? The Murad and Marlon Moraes fight?
I don't think that's on this card.
Okay, yeah, so my mistake. So that one's not on this card, but that one is coming up, though. I'm pretty sure that one is like in the next month or so. Like that fight is coming up. I want to say in the next handful of cards, you know, within the next two or three cards after this one, the Marlon Moraes and Merab Dzhabashvili fight is happening. So you'll have those four top 135ers contending right there. And then, you know, I wouldn't doubt it that either one of those two guys are open grounds to being called out, you know, Dillashaw and Sanhagen. So Sanhagen might, you know, I very likely I think one of those four guys are actually one of those two winners from those two fights will call out Corey Sanhagen, you know, to fight him. So, you know, I could see Pedro Munhoz calling him out. I feel like Aldo, I don't know what Aldo would do, honestly. But I could see Merab calling him out as well.
Hey, man, 135 is stacked. There is no dodging nobody once you get in the top 10. Once you get in the top 10, you will, I'm going to say the top 12. Once you hit the top 12, everybody in there is capable of winning a fight against anybody that they go against. So, hey, 135 is definitely stacked right now.
And that's why you see Sean O'Malley not fighting ranked guys, because in my opinion, he knows that that's how deep the division is, and you could lose to anybody in the top 15. It's not a top heavy top 15. It is a top heavy, but not really in, not really true to the meaning of top heavy. It's I would say it's very well distributed. You know, the division is very well distributed. You know, as far as the level of the guys, you know, ranked number one, you know, from the champion down to ranked number 15. You know, other divisions you only really have really dangerous guys in like the top six or seven, and sometimes even in the top three or four. And the rest of the guys are you know, not as dangerous. You know, for example, the light heavyweight division. You know, you really don't have a top 15 there where everybody's a killer. You know, it's kind of a inflated division, you know, if we're being honest.
Yeah, it's kind of like the light heavyweight division is top five, and that's it. Anybody after five, maybe six, you like, who are these guys, you know? They haven't left an impression on you yet. Whereas these 135ers, we done seen all of them fight basically each other, and they still have to do it. So, hey, man, 135 is just – and 135 is like – what's the Dustin Poirier division? That's – is that like –
No, 155.
Yeah, 155. 135, 155 are probably the best two divisions in the UFC right now, hands down.
Yeah, I could get behind that. You know, the next thing that I want to get to – well, actually, yeah, the next thing that I want to get to is, you know, Sanhagen might fight one of those guys. Dillashaw might fight for the title, or maybe not. He might – I don't even know who he'll fight at this point. Cause he sounded like he was open to fighting anybody in the top five, which I was kind of surprised to hear him say that. But at the same time, I wasn't, because, you know, it's not like he's always been this huge – you know, it's not like he's always been this huge ego. You know, he definitely loves to compete as well. There's definitely that in him. So it's kind of dope. You know, probably see him versus somebody in the top five. I don't know who that fight will be, but you know, maybe he could fight the winner of Aldo and Munhoz. Hopefully, he would get to fight Munhoz. I don't really want to see Dillashaw versus Aldo, but. We could get that fight. I just wouldn't feel that great about it. But so the one thing that I think that was kind of debunked in that fight was, you know, all the ring rust people, you know, the people that, and we have said that in some cases, you know, we've said that, oh, this guy's coming back after X amount of time, you know, it's been a couple of years. How's he going to look? You know, I think Dillashaw kind of made ring rust look like a joke in that fight. I think he looked really good for coming off the couch after 2 years. And realistically, that fight was more like 2.5 years on the couch for Dillashaw. It wasn't, because he's been banned since January of 2019, January, February. So, you know, that fight he just did was like, what, late June? Late July. So, yeah, he pretty much was like a year, 2.5 years off the couch, and I thought he looked pretty good. Another time where we've seen that someone come off a long layoff and actually look really good was when Nate Diaz came back and fought Anthony Pettis, and that was the first time he fought. What did you say?
I was agreeing. I was like, yep.
Yeah, Nate Diaz came back and fought Anthony Pettis, and I want to say he hadn't fought for about 3 years at that time, probably a little over 3 years at that point, and I thought he looked really good. So, you know, that's pretty much what it is with that. I mean, there's been a couple of times it's been disproven. I think Dillashaw kind of continued that, you know, disproving that theory, and he looked really good. What did you think?
Man, I used to be a proponent of ring rust. Well, I really believed it, but I don't believe it no more, man. TJ Dillashaw has definitely got me off board with it. Dominique Cruz, when he came back, got me off of it. Actually, even Conor McGregor a little bit in this fight against Khabib. You know, he really didn't show no rust. I mean, he ain't really show no ring rust. Khabib, it's just that he just couldn't stop the takedowns. But he didn't look like he was unfamiliar with the octagon. But I think these guys now, they train probably all the time. So being that you are with our training in the octagon, or you are doing some form of training at least 2 or 3 times a week, then you're not going to have ring rust. Now, another thing, man, you talked about is sparring. You can't simulate what's going to happen inside the octagon and sparring, but a lot of these fighters don't spar no more, Key. They say themselves to the fight. You know, they go in, do their technical training, do their cardio, maybe lift weights, you know, probably punch bags and maybe do some shadow boxing. But a lot of these guys don't spar no more, man. I think that's a good thing, too, because you are putting your body through unnecessary risks and injury. So, man, these guys, man, this is a different breed of athlete that we have in the UFC right now, man. And it's good to see. It's good for the sport. It's definitely good for us fans because, to be honest, I was kind of worried about TJ coming back and fighting Sanhagen because I knew Sanhagen cardio was actually pretty good. I knew TJ, prior to him getting suspended, had good cardio. But once again, you can't simulate what's going to happen inside the octagon. And I think we can't use ring rust as an excuse no more. I think these guys have proven that. And, yeah, we just can't use ring rust no more, man. They lose a fight, they lose a fight. It ain't because they haven't fought in a while.
And I think one thing that, you know, to kind of stem off of that, you know, we probably won't be talking about ring reference and ring rust too much more on this show after that performance and, you know, some of these recent performances with guys coming back. But, you know, one thing that I think that is scary for, you know, pretty much all the top fighters in the 135 division right now is the fact that when I was watching TJ fight, one thing that I end up saying out loud was the way that his pace is moving backwards like Floyd Mayweather does. So in the early rounds, you say, okay, he's very energetic here. But then it looked like he never really started going down to me, in my opinion. I feel like he came out, you know, pretty calm, you know, very composed, but he wasn't slow. He was he was pushing a high pace, pushing very, very, very fast boxing exchanges, TJ was, which had me a little bit worried watching him trying to push those boxing exchanges and really walk Sanhagen down. I was a little bit worried about that, you know, in the first round. But so then what happened was I feel like he never really slowed down, and what ended up happening was it seemed like he sped up to me. He started to come on more. So if either he was at his slowest in the early round and he perpetually increased his pace and his output towards the fourth and fifth rounds, or he came out very fast paced, or I wouldn't say very fast, but he did come out a higher pace than the average guy comes out, especially in such a high-level fight like that. Very, very steady pace in the first and second round. The third round, he kind of started to, okay, you could see that both those guys looked a little bit tired. You see him kind of dip a little bit, but then guess what? He popped back out in the fourth and fifth round, pretty much back to the level he was at in the first and second round. When I was watching him in the third round and in the fourth round, I never really thought that there was a dip. I'm only saying there was a dip just out of respect to the fact that I and out of acknowledgement that I did see him appear to be tired. So I'm just gonna say that there's a dip in the third round. I don't really know exactly where it was, but it was somewhere in the middle area of the fight. He comes out. You could see him and Sanhagen, like I said, they either looked physically tired or they were mentally tired. Like I said to you before, I thought Sanhagen looked mentally tired, mentally confused. But the dip was there, and then 4 and 5, he comes back out, and I remember saying, I thought, if you didn't tell me what round it was, I thought Dillashaw in round 4 was Dillashaw in round 1. That's what I thought when I was watching it. I really did. If you didn't tell me, I would not have guessed that it. If I had just walked in the room and missed the first 3 rounds, I would not have guessed that the fight was in the 4th round. I would have thought it was either in the 1st round or the 2nd round. If I was just watching TJ and the output and the pace that he was pushing, I would have thought it was in the first 2 rounds, 100%. And that was in the 4th round. That's scary for the 45ers.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because if you really looked at it, outside of the 2nd round when he got cut, I want to say he got cut in the 2nd round. Outside of the 2nd round and maybe early in the 3rd round, you know, I think he came out in the 1st round really, really like TJ. And then in the 2nd round, Sanhagen kind of pieced him up a little bit. But after he got over the cut, it seemed like he got stronger as the fight went on. But that being said, I had TJ winning rounds 1 and 3. I had Sanhagen winning rounds 2 and 4 and possibly 5. But 5 was so close. 4 was so close that it was like, I can't be mad at how the judges judged it. If they would have came out with a draw, you know I hate draws, I wouldn't have been mad. But, you know, it is what it is. But TJ did get stronger as the fight went on, like you were saying, because he definitely looked good in the 1st round. And then picking up probably middle 3rd, I think he got his 2nd win, and he got over the cut, and he just became TJ Dillashaw again. And it was great to see.
Yeah, and some people might have thought that he sounded cocky when he said, you know, that the title is up for grabs right now. He said something like that. He was like, in the post-fight interview, he was like, either give me a shot at the title, which he said was basically up for grabs because he felt like those are both easy fights, Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. Or he said, if not that, I'll fight anybody in the top 5. I could see, you know, some people might say that sounded really cocky to say that, but at the same time, I feel like he's justified in talking like that. If you really compare, you know, these guys, yeah, Jan and Sterling specifically, compared to TJ, I feel like me personally, a Jan and Dillashaw fight would be a very competitive fight. At the same time, I think Dillashaw would be right there with Jan, if not a little bit above. So I don't think that Jan is not – I don't think that's an unwinnable fight for TJ. I don't think that's like an extremely difficult fight. You know, I think it's a competitive fight, but I don't think he has as much of a problem with Jan or Sterling than you know, a Sanhagen or – you know, a couple of these other guys, you know, at 135. I don't think those guys, you know, in my opinion, I feel like that's the 1 and 2 at bantamweight for a long time, Jan and Sterling. I think Jan is still either 1 or 2, but I don't really think Sterling is number 2 at this point. You know, I think to me, you know, either Jan looks so good in the title fight or Sterling just looks so bad. I don't know which one. Maybe Jan made him up here worse than he was. Okay.
Aljo looked really, really bad in that fight. I ain't gonna say Jan made him look bad, but it was like when Aljo couldn't take him down, he had no plan B. He didn't know what else to do. So it's B all the way. Aljo just looked really, really bad. He looked like a one-dimensional fighter that had one plan coming into the fight, and if that plan didn't work, he was going to try to make it work, and it wasn't working.
And it was confusing to me to see that. I mean, first of all, I just want to say, I think if that ends up being the fight, you know, they're booked to fight, and if, you know, Jan were to lose to Sterling this time, I have TJ absolutely walking through Sterling to win the belt.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
I have TJ pretty much walking over Sterling like a doormat. And I'm an early fan of Sterling, you know, before he was even in the top 15. But I'm just so disappointed with, you know, he talked a lot of trash going into that fight, and then you get in there, and you looked like you only had one game plan, and that was it. You know, he didn't even really try to strike, and we have seen him look – we've seen his striking. Like, I watched him strike with Jimmy Rivera. I watched him in the Jimmy Rivera fight. He was striking with Jimmy Rivera for pretty much the entirety of that 15 minutes, if not that entire 15 minutes. I don't even think there was one takedown in that fight. What was up with that? And I feel like Jimmy Rivera is up there in the striking department for the 135 division. Now, I feel like he's one of those guys.
But I think Jimmy Rivera in that fight, he was scared of being taken down. I think he was more worried about being taken down than anything else. And that's what led to it being a stand-up battle. And I think Aljo was trying to prove something, too, in that fight. Let me show people that I can box a little bit. And when you're trying to get away from your bread and butter, it's just not a smart move. Like me and you always talk about, we talked about it the last show about Marab. Marab can stand and strike with anybody. But guess what he's doing? He's striking with you just to set up his takedown, because once he takes you down, he's going to smother you. Khabib is the same way. Khabib is not going to go in there and trade blows with nobody. He's throwing punches just to get your timing to take you down. But, yeah, man, I think – I don't know, man. But, you know, I think, guys, when you've been doing well with a particular game plan for so long, that's always your go-to, your bread and butter. But in today's UFC, these guys watch tape. They watch tape. They got training partners that can do what you do. So they're going to come up with a way to make you try to do something else. And I think that's what happened in the Peter Yar Aljo fight, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of sad to me, you know. I think so. You know, back to what I was my point, so I don't get too far. Like it was definitely justified. You know, TJ saying that those were easy fights, I could see why he would say that. You know, it's in my belief, I think the Sanhagen fight was already the hardest fight for him in the division. Personally, I think Jan is – I'm not sure that I believe Jan is better than Sanhagen. You know, I'm not fully sold on that. You know, I've been watching Jan since – Jan's another guy that I wasn't really a fan of. I wasn't much a fan of him, but I have been aware of him since before he was ranked as well. And but I'm still not sure that I haven't watched enough of Sanhagen yet, because, like I said, that last fight was the first time I've actually seen Sanhagen fight. Now, I've always heard of his fights, but I just happen to not be – I just always happen to miss his fights, not on purpose, but it just always kind of happened that I didn't see his fight, you know, the night of. And that was the first time I've seen him fight. But, you know, just based off that, I don't know that you could sell me on Jan being a better fighter than Sanhagen. So, with that being said, I feel like TJ already fought the most dangerous guy. And you know, I think the Jan fight will be close. I think he runs through Sterling. So, you know, I think the best bet is for Jan to win that fight.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So, I think at this point, you know, without me spoiling anything from the press conference, if you had watched it before tonight, and like if you had watched it up to this point, I would have said, let's break down some of the stuff from the press conference, because there was a lot of things that were said in there that I think you'll have some thoughts about. You know, I feel like there's at least like two or three possibly four or five different moments you'll want to talk about after you watch it. And there's a certain moment, you know, there's a certain moment that really took me by surprise, you know. But, you know, I'm sure you'll know it when you see it. There was a certain moment that I was like, wow, I didn't even know they could do that. I didn't even know a fighter could do that. But, yeah, you'll know it when you see it. But I think let's jump into the UFC 265 card. You ready for it?
I'm ready, bro.
All right, let me pull up this card. Did you see they got Sean Strickland is fighting Luke Rockhold?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. They were talking trash to each other on Instagram.
That is going to be funny. As we all
that's
know.
Another guy I don't think I've ever seen fight John Strickland. Maybe I have, and I just don't remember. I think I've seen his name, but maybe I just wasn't, like, didn't become a fan of him. But I definitely didn't see his fight last weekend. But, yeah,
well,
it's pretty cool.
You probably seen him fight, but he not one of them guys that,
would be on my radar?
No, he ain't one of them guys that you'll be like, damn, I want to see him fight again. You know, he ain't one of them guys. But his fights normally are pretty good, though. I mean, now that I think about it, his fights aren't boring.
Yeah,
but
nah.
For fighting Luke Rockhold, though, for real, though, I mean, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
You know I'm not a fan of Luke Rockhold, so.
Yeah, I think it's a decent fight. I mean, Rockhold has seemed really chinny. You know, he's been getting knocked out left and right, you know, as of what we've seen him lately. So it don't really make me too excited to see him fighting because I just feel like he's so chinny now that I just don't really expect him to get KO'd. You know what? I think let's jump into this card because I'm just looking at this card and I noticed that your boy is on this card, and I don't know if you even know that. So
Bobby Green,
let's go. and he has a good fight.
Yes,
I didn't even realize Bobby Green and Rafael Fiziev. That's a banger of a fight. I wasn't even and Fiziev is a dangerous man too. That's a big fight for Bobby Green, I think.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You knew he was fighting?
Yeah,
y'all. If you didn't know that and you haven't listened to our show, one thing to just know before you listen further is that Bobby Green is probably Lee's favorite UFC fighter on the roster at this time, at least. I'm not saying all time, but at least on this current roster, I think Bobby we have enough evidence. We've compiled enough evidence over the course of our shows we've done that Bobby Green is probably Lee's favorite UFC fighter at the moment. So, and that's fine. You know, I think he's a really entertaining fighter to watch. And I look forward to every time I see him on the card, I look forward to watching his fight. So that's one thing I do know. So if anything, it's definitely justified. He's a very solid fighter. And I felt like, I want to say he lost to – he's been robbed before. I feel like he gets robbed in the city.
Yeah, that's one thing. Yeah.
That's one thing with him that I do know is that he lets fights go to decisions, and I feel like when he lets it go to the scorecards, they like to steal his wins away, and that's one thing that I do know about him, and it's unfortunate. So, yeah, if you look at his average fight time, he's just under 13 minutes for his average fight time. They say he's 37% decisions, but I mean, I've definitely seen him go to decision a couple times, and I've seen him been robbed. There's been fights where I was like, okay, he definitely won that fight, and they didn't give him the decision on the scorecard. So hopefully that doesn't come into play with this fight. You know, hopefully Bobby Green can finish the fight, you know, so he doesn't even have to deal with the judges. But it depends how he wants to play this one out, because he has a dangerous fighter too. So we'll see how he wants to play this fight out, how to strategize.
Yeah, man. I'm a big Bobby Green fan, as Key said. I just like him because when he go in there, he's talking shit the whole time he's fighting. He's actually in there putting on a good show. And the guy, he really has good skills. But the thing about him is he's not a finisher. And normally, I think his fighting style turns judges off. That's why he all kind of comes up short on the scorecards. But, hey, man, I'm still a fan of him, dog. And I'm glad he's fighting on this big card. And hopefully, you know, more people know about Bobby Green after this fight, dog.
And I'll say one thing. I mean, I'm looking at the red and blue stats on UFC.com, and one thing I can say is that it looks like Fiziev does absorb more punches. You know, he does absorb a good amount more punches per minute than Bobby Green does. And Bobby Green does have a better defense, you know, at least on the numbers. But then Fiziev has a higher significant strike percentage. So, and then overall, I mean, the strikes landed per minute is, you know, it's fairly close. Bobby Green has the edge there, but it's fairly close. The stats are pretty split, you know, as far as going all the way down the list, the stats are pretty split, you know. This is good matchmaking. I like this fight. I like this fight a lot. Just looking at the stats, I feel like it's a very back and forth fight.
It should be a good fight.
You want me to do my prediction? Want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead. You know who I'm going with. I'm going with Bobby Green. I'm going with Bobby Green, but he has to finish it. And I'm going to go Bobby Green split decision.
All right. So I'm going to go with Fiziev. I think Fiziev's got 67% KO, TKO. I'm going to say Fiziev wins by TKO in the second round.
Oh. What? For real?
And that's one of those times where I make a pick and I'm glad to be wrong.
But the guy Bobby is fighting is a really tough guy, though. The guy Bobby is fighting is a really tough guy. He is a tough guy.
It's just one of those times where I can make a pick. I can make a pick with my brain and then be happy when my heart is right. That is definitely one of those picks. I've been trying to do that more lately too. Try to pick who I'd rather see lose, and then, you know what I'm saying, if, you know, when I'm wrong, I'm actually happy to be wrong. You know, it kind of works out, and then it's a double win.
All right.
So yeah, we'll go with you at Bobby Green by finish.
Yeah, I heard Bobby Green. Yeah.
And I had Fiziev by finish.
I got Bobby Green by split decision.
Split decision. All right. So first fight on the main card is Tong Yadong and Casey Kenny. This is a banger. This is a banger. This card is actually low-key all bangers. If you really look at it, these are all great fights. If you really look at it, I mean, we're just looking at pretty much the top, you know, for the sake of our predictions and for the sake of time on what we have left on our show, we're just looking at the top six fights right now. But if you just look at the top six fights right now, these are all bangers. I mean, you had...
Yes, sir. That's a nice card.
You have the Bobby Green fight we just had, and you have the Song Yadong, Casey Kenny. This is going to be an absolute banger. And actually, look, I was right. There was another bantamweight fight. This is why I thought there was this is why I mixed this one up with the Merab and Moraes fight. See, I knew there was two bantamweight fights on this card, but I mixed up that bantamweight fight with this one. But this is still a banger, though. Song Yadong is a very fun guy to watch, and you know, I wrote an article about Casey Kenney when he was first coming in his UFC debut. I thought he would be a fun guy to watch as well, and I feel like he has been so far. Even though he lost to Dominic Cruz, I mean, I kind of expected him to lose to Dominic Cruz, and I feel like, you know, that was a lesson for him. You know, I feel like that was a fight to learn, you know, for Casey Kenney. So I think he'll have taken a lot from that loss and going into this fight.
Yeah, man. Sometimes you have to fight a veteran to kind of like bring you back down to earth, to make you go in and work hard in the gym. And I think Casey Kenney with the Dominique Cruz fight, I think that was his learning lesson. But Song Yadong is a tough guy, man.
He is a tough guy.
Looking at the stats are pretty much close, except on the takedown accuracy. Song Yadong is 75% and Casey Kenney is 39%. Man,
it's a tough call.
I'm gonna go Song Yadong, man. I'm gonna take him in a mild upset because Kenny is the favorite. I'm going to take Yadong in a mild upset, and I'm going to go unanimous decision. I'm not even going to go split. I'm going to say Yadong wins by unanimous decision.
And I'm actually going with the same pick. I'm going with Song Yadong by unanimous decision and a really, really, really competitive fight. And that's another one.
Don't be surprised if it's the fight of the night.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's the fight of the night as well. And I won't be disappointed if I'm wrong and my boy Casey Kenney wins. That's the best.
Hey, that's going to be a new caveat.
Yep, that's my new shit. That's my new thing right there. So this next fight is another one where I'm badly conflicted here, badly. So my girl Tisha Torres is fighting Angela Hill. One thing that I want to ask you about Angela Hill, they said that she only has one loss in the UFC. I swear I've seen her lose like three or four times in the UFC. Does she only have one loss?
Nah, they lied because she done got screwed around. She's like the female Bobby Green. If her fight goes to the scorecard, it doesn't end well for Angela, man.
Yeah.
If her
fight goes to the
scorecard, yeah.
Because they said that it was like, I heard something of like, they said like the first loss of her professional career, something like that at the press conference, and I was like, what? I was like, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. She's a very talented fighter, but I'm like, I know she's got a handful of losses on her record. She's not like one loss on her record. I don't even know where they came. Maybe I misheard what they were saying, but I could have sworn they said that about her.
Let me see. Maybe she hasn't been finished. Maybe she only been finished once.
Yeah. That very well could be. But was she finished
maybe
in her last fight?
Nah, because she's only been finished once. She lost a submission fight to Rose Namajunas at UFC 192. And then she went to Invicta for a year and then came back to the UFC. But she's only been finished once. But she got a whole lot of losses, though.
Yeah, she's 13-9. I mean, both these girls got a good amount of losses. Tisha Torres is 11-5. This is a tough fight. You want to pick first?
Well, you know where I'm going. This is probably the only fight that I'm going to pick being biased outside of Bobby Green. I'm a big Angela Hill fan. I love Angela, man. I love the way that she's willing to jump in there and fight anybody and fight on short notice. Her and Tisha got some kind of underlying beef. Tisha's a minus 140 and Angela's a plus 120. I'm going with the upset again. I'm taking Angela Hill. She will win a split decision over Tisha Torres. The judges will finally lean towards Angela Hill in this fight. I think this has a chance of being a really, really good fight. Tisha hasn't fought in a while, I don't think. She hasn't fought in a while.
Well, Eric, I mean, it's kind of tough in her case because you really look at it, the losses that she has are to, like, the best females in the UFC.
Yeah.
Like, she was losing. Like, before she went out, she was fighting. I'm pretty sure she fought Joanna. Before that, I think she fought Misha Tate. Like, she was fighting, like, the best names there are. So it's kind of, like, tough to look at that. Her losses are
Namba Yunes, Jessica Andrade, Joanna, and Wally Jane. And then she lost to Marina Rodriguez also. That's a fight
Marina Rodriguez is a beast too.
Yeah, she's pretty good, but I thought Tisha should have won that fight. But, you know, she lost that fight. So, you know, but she has fought everybody, man. You look at her. You look at the people she done fought. Actually, she got a win over Angela Hill already. This is a rematch. Okay. You'll take Angela Hill for sure.
Yeah, so with that being said, I'm going with I thought I heard something like that, but you just confirmed it for me that it is a rematch. I'm going to go with Angela Hill to win by, she has a 0% submission. She doesn't do submissions at all. I could have sworn I'd seen her do some groundwork. Wow. All right, well, I'm going to go with Angela Hill to win by TKO in the third round.
Wow. I like it.
Yeah, I think this one, Angela Hill doesn't let it go to the scorecard. She tries to finish this time, especially since she has a loss to Tisha already. But it's another one of those fights, though. It's another one of those fights. If I'm wrong, I'll be happy to be wrong. You know, Tisha Torres is probably my favorite female fighter in the game. So I definitely would be happy to be wrong about that pick. The next one we have is another banger. Oh my goodness, this card is all bangers. This main card is just savage fight after savage fight. Michael Chiesa, number 5 ranked welterweight, versus number 6 Vicente Luque. Lee, this is the type of fights that we were calling for on our show not that long ago. It's almost meant to be. We were calling for this level of fights. The main event is the number 2 versus the number 3. The co-main event, number 5 versus the number 9. The co-main event is number 5 versus number 6. Torres versus Hill is number 10 versus number 12. It's like, come on. Like, the co-main event, we got Chiesa number 5 and Luque number 6. Like, that's the kind of fights that me and you have been calling for years. We've been wanting them to get these top 5 matchups in and actually have people in the top 5 fight each other and fight the guy that's either directly below them or directly above them, instead of it always being like, you know, the number 2 versus the number 8, or, you know, the number 4 versus, you know, the number 4 versus the number 7, you know, actually have the top 5 pretty much, or the top 6 fight each other within the top, you know, guys that are right below them or right above them. And that's kind of what we're getting to see at this point. So I'm really excited about this fight. Who you got in this one?
Man, damn, Keith. This is a tough one, dog. Oh my goodness, this is a tough one, bro. I'm gonna go Chiesa, man. I think Chiesa's gonna pressure him with his striking and then with his takedowns. Although Vicente can fight off his back, but I think Chiesa is in a position now where he knows that if he wins, he's in a title picture. But Vicente, oh man, let me see, man, they both ain't no reach advantage. This fight is basically pretty much even Steven, except Chiesa has like a 2-inch height advantage. Man, I'm going with Chiesa, man. I think Chiesa takes him down and submits him in the third round, man. I think Vicente puts on a good fight. I think he comes out, probably wins round one. I think Chiesa wins round two. And they both come out in round three trying to go for a finish. And I think Vicente makes a mistake. Chiesa takes him down and submits him in the third round. I'm going Chiesa, third round submission.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Chiesa, second round submission. I think Chiesa wins this fight with a complex type of submission. I think it's going to be probably like some kind of triangle choke, maybe an anaconda choke, something like that. I think it's going to be something complex here. I think Luque, similar to what you said, I think Luque is going to make a bad mistake here. And, you know, being that he's good off his back, he's going to be doing his own groundwork and fighting defensively. But I think he's gonna make a mistake and slip into exactly where Chiesa wants him. He's going to slip into a bad position, and Chiesa's going to capitalize on that, especially where Chiesa was literally just called out by Kamaru Usman. Like, Chiesa understands that the champion already wanted to fight him. Like, what kind of mindset does that put you in when the champion calling you out to fight? Like, what, you don't really often see that happening, you know what I'm saying? Especially where Chiesa, you know, is on the cusp of the top five. Like, he is number five. He's not, you know, the number one or number two guy, and the champion's calling for him. So I think Chiesa's locked in right now. I think he's going to win second round submission. I want to say triangle choke. That's what I'm going to go with it. I'm going to lock in on triangle choke. Next fight, we got the co-main event. It is Jose Aldo versus the. Oh wait, then I gotta get into saying the rankings. It gets me hyped up, man. I gotta do that. The next time I host, I'm doing that. We have the number five ranked bantamweight former featherweight champion Jose Aldo versus the number nine ranked bantamweight Pedro Munhoz. Jose Aldo is a -140 favorite. Betting favorite. Pedro Munhoz is a +120 betting underdog. Who do you got in this fight?
Oh, man.
Another banger, right? Another tough one.
Man.
Let me just add one more thing for you. It, just in case you forgot. They're also both from Brazil. That's another factor. It's even more of a banger. This is Brazil versus Brazil fight right here.
Yeah. Oh, man. Ugh. Okay, Keys. Bruh. But this fight is a banger for all the wrong reasons. Because when you think about it, Pedro Munhoz, he was basically on top of the world, and he was like basically on track to be basically a champ. And then he kind of like went on like a little loser streak, and now he's fighting to get back, you know, where he was. Whereas Aldo has been to the top of the mountain, probably been one of the most dominating champions in UFC and WEC or Strikeforce history, I think. I think he was Strikeforce. It may have been WEC. I can't remember which one. But, man, it's just, wow. Man, world. I want to go with Aldo so bad. Man, I'm going to go with Aldo, man. I think Aldo has been, like, actually has been a little rejuvenated going down to 135. And actually, this fight is minus 115, minus 105. So basically, it's a pick'em. If Aldo was to use his kick game like he used to, this fight wouldn't even be close. But being that he doesn't, I'm going with Aldo, man. I think Aldo wins a unanimous decision, man, over Pedro Munhoz in a spirited fight. I think Aldo is going to reestablish his – I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say it right now. I think Aldo reestablishes his vicious kick game, and that's what's going to lead him to victory in this fight against Pedro Munhoz. Aldo, unanimous decision.
Yeah, this is what I'm thinking here. So Aldo's got a pretty decent – he's got a pretty decent arm reach advantage. He's got the leg reach and the arm reach. I think we will see Aldo throwing his leg kicks in this fight. And I think Aldo wins this fight by finish. I think Aldo finishes Pedro. I want to say – the round you picked, I'm gonna go third round. I think the damage to the legs, I think Aldo's gonna throw shots to the body. He's gonna be slick with his boxing like he always is. He's always been a great boxer, in my opinion. And I think Aldo's just gonna put a lot of damage. He's gonna put a lot of volume in this fight, especially where I just think Aldo, like you said, Aldo, you know, he's been to the top of the mountain, but at the same time, you know, I'm going to kind of push back on that a little bit and just point out the fact that I feel like he is driven to succeed in a new division. And I feel like he wants to get to the top of the mountain again. I don't think he's just in the division to keep on fighting and not to fight the best. Like, I think he wants to be the 135 champion. You know, and I feel like, you know, he can see a path to doing that. And especially with the fact that, you know, there's a number of guys that Aldo came up in the same, you know, fighting pretty much in the same generation as that are the 135 division is pretty much compiled of right now. Like, you have Dillashaw there, you have Cruz there, Faber's even in the mix now and then. Like, there's guys out there that, you know, Aldo can relate to, and he can look at and be like, all right, well, all those guys are still doing it. I could definitely still do it. And he's younger than those guys. He's not younger than all of them, but I know he's younger than Faber, and I want to say he's younger than Cruz as well. I want to say he's a couple years younger than Cruz, and he's a couple years younger than Faber as well. I want to say him and TJ might be around the same age, if not they're like a year under or over. But I think he looked at those guys, and he's like, all right, if those guys can still perform at a high level, he see Cruz recent performance, Dillashaw comes back, looks great after 2 years. Those are guys that, you know, pretty much they all came up in the same generation. You know, if you ask me, those guys all came up around the same time. So I think he sees that, and the guy, those guys can succeed. You know, he's 34 years of age. He's still got, you know, a good amount of miles on him. He can still go for another 5 years if he wants to. So I think he wants to win here. You know, he went on a 3-loss streak, but he was fighting the best guys. I also think he got robbed versus Marlon Moraes. I think he beat Marlon Moraes. Obviously, the Petr Yan fight, I thought he lost that fair and square. Volkanovski lost that fair and square. But, yeah, I definitely thought the Marlon Moraes fight should be a win on his record. But I think he got robbed in that fight. And I think he wins this one. I'm going to say he puts a lot of damage on Munhoz, and Munhoz cracks in the third round, and he puts him away. Third round TKO. You know, my favorite, third round TKO.
Yeah, that is the Keys go-to. All right, you got
on to the top of the top of the mountain, the top of the evening, we have, and I'm kind of surprised by this betting line, to be honest. I'm a little bit taken back by this betting line. Y'all, I'm looking at the odds makers a little bit sideways right now. I don't know how I feel about this. So we're looking at the number two ranked heavyweight in the world, Derek Lewis, former title challenger, versus the number three ranked in the world, Cyril Gane. They're fighting for the interim heavyweight belt. Derek Lewis is a plus 270 underdog in his home city of Houston, Texas. Cyril Gane is a minus 350 favorite on enemy soil. What do we think about this fight? This is a tough one.
Actually, this is pretty easy for me. Cyril Gane definitely is. He's definitely probably one of the most athletic big men in the heavyweight division. But I'm going with Derek, man. I think Derek Lewis has his eyes set on Francis Ngannou. And wronging that right of that sorry fight that we were so amped up to see that turned out to be such a snooze fest. I'm going with Ngannou. I'm going with Derek Lewis, man. Derek Lewis, third round knockout, man. Cyril Gane is game. He's definitely a good fighter. He's definitely the most athletic heavyweight in the division. But I'm taking Derek Lewis, Clint, being at home, man. I think he wins this fight. I think it's going to be a very, very close fight. But one thing that you brought up when we was texting is that we really haven't seen Cyril Gane take a punch. And I think he's going to get tested in this fight. That chin is going to get tested. I'm going with Derek Lewis, third round knockout.
Okay, so I'm going a similar way as you. Cyril Gane was Cyril Gane. I wrote about him before he made his UFC debut. That's actually two guys I wrote about in this card. Him and Casey Kennedy. But yeah, I wrote about him before he made his debut. He's definitely dominated since he's been in the UFC, and he looked incredible. He's the most athletic heavyweight by miles. And it's not even, the nearest second isn't even close. I definitely think that, Cyril Gane is a more complete fighter. All around, I feel like he's a better fighter. I'm pretty sure he's big into kickboxing. He might even be like a black belt kickboxing. Yeah. Kickboxing black belt. They even have that. Yeah. I don't know. So yeah, but he's a top level kickboxer regardless of it. But I just think that this fight, really looking at it overall, Cyril Gane is only 9-0, he's only had 9 pro fights. Derek Lewis, 25-7. I just feel like he fought Ngannou, even though the fight was terrible. He's fought all the best heavyweights. I just think, that factor that I was talking about, like, have we seen Cyril Gane take damage in a fight and come back from that adversity after, and really be able to take those big shots? From the fights he's had, he's not easy to hit. He's not an easy guy to hit, and he's a very smart fighter, but I just think here, Derek Lewis in his home city, I think Cyril Gane's going to look excellent in the first round. I think probably, I want to say late in the second round, Derek Lewis is going to be loading up his right hand. Well, not loading up, but he's going to be charging up his right hand in that first round. And I think he's just going to be waiting for that big shot. And I think he's going to land, I think he's going to land that big shot. He's going to land the kiss of death on Cyril Gane. And I think Derek Lewis wins by second round knockout to become the interim heavyweight champion, to then set up the rematch with Francis Ngannou.
Oh, man. Well, this is one of those fights that whoever wins is going to earn it, but whoever loses, you're going to probably feel bad for them because you know that somewhere down the road, they probably should be a heavyweight champ I think if Lewis loses, it hurts him more. But I think Cyril Gane had only 9 fights. Him losing, he can recover. But I think this is Lewis' time, man. And when it was announced that this was for an interim heavyweight title, I wasn't too happy about it. But, you know, I guess this is a way to put pressure on Ngannou that you and John Jones aren't going to force my hand, and we're just, the division's going to move on with or without y'all. So, hey, let's make it happen.
Yeah, I think and also, you know, kind of stemming off from that, but kind of parallel to that, this is another one of those fights where I'll be very happy to be wrong. If Cyril Gane were to win the fight, I'll be very happy to be wrong. But at the same time, you know, it would be nice to see Derek Lewis win, even though we don't really look at the interim belt. You know, it's still seeing Derek Lewis win UFC gold in his hometown. That'd be epic. And I think Derek Lewis has paid his dues. You know, I think he deserves another crack at the title, and I wouldn't mind seeing him get that. You know, as much as I'd want to see Cyril Gane get it, at the same time, you know, I also don't want to see him get rushed to the title at the same time. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's kind of what they've been trying to do with him. I feel like they've just been rushing him, you know, right from the point he got into the UFC. Like it was just, okay, you know, get a win, and then boom, okay, now he's going to fight, you know, top 15 guy, okay, top 10, top 5, and now he's fighting an interim belt, and he doesn't even have 10 pro wins. So it's like, you know, for Cyril Gane, I think if he does win, I'll be happy, but at the same time, I think he could benefit from getting some more miles on him and getting some more experience in the cage, because I think 9-0, you know, going into a fight versus Francis Ngannou, and not just Francis Ngannou, but this version of Francis Ngannou that we have clearly seen has evolved from the old Francis Ngannou, I think would be, you know, I think it might be a little bit early for Cyril Gane to fight that guy. So, no, I think I'd rather see him. I wouldn't mind seeing him go back out and gain some more experience, get some more wins, you know, and then come back to the title later. But like I said, I'll still be happy if he does end up winning.
Yeah, I think this fight, especially if it's competitive, we'll definitely see some form of a rematch down the road.
Yeah, I didn't know. I thought I was waiting. I thought you were going to say something else. Yeah, I think there could be a rematch down the road for sure. And I think it will be competitive. You know, I think the first round, I think Cyril Gane is going to win the first round. Probably Cyril Gane wins the first round 10-9 pretty clearly. And then I think the second round, I think it'll appear to look like Cyril Gane was on his way to winning the second round as well, 10-9. I think he'll just be so sharp. But I think Derek Lewis, you know, the whole first round will be kind of charging up that right hand and kind of trying to read him and figure out where he can catch him at and where that shot's going to be. And I think that he'll find the target late in the second round. I think it'll be like very end of the second round, you know what I'm saying? Like final minute of the round, final 30 seconds of the round, you know, type of deal like that.
Yeah, I think Derek, because, you know, he's hard. You can take him down, but it's hard to keep him down. That's one thing about Derek Lewis, except against DC. You know, he can be taken down, but he just gets back up to his feet. And I think I like Cyril Gane winning round one. I see Cyril Gane coming out of round two with some confidence. I think Derek Lewis catches him probably in the middle of the second round and probably comes close to finishing him in the second and then he completes the job in third.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an exciting fight. You know, I'm definitely going to be trying to tune into this for sure. I'm definitely going to be trying to tune into this. Probably end up ordering it. I might even try to go watch it at, like, Buffalo Wild Wings or a bar somewhere, because I'm always chilling in my apartment. I mean, it is nice to watch the fights here, but at the same time, I haven't been out to a bar in a while, so I might try to go catch it at Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that, because Hooters don't really play the UFC fights around my way.
Yeah, Hooters plays them here.
Yeah, it's kind of up and down. Like, once in a while, Hooters might play the fight. Like, I want to say even the last fight, I think I even called them to see if they were playing one of the last events they did, and it was a big card, and the Hooters wasn't playing it. But
that's kind of weird, because they're supposed to be like the UFC, they're supposed to be UFC sponsor or something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's just a chain. Maybe it's just my local chain doesn't do it or something. Maybe they're not a participant because, I mean, I know out my way, the Buffalo Wild Wings chains out here, especially the one that's right down the street, the Hooters and the Buffalo Wild Wings are like a 2-minute drive from each other. And the Buffalo Wild Wings out here, I've talked to the management there before, and they said that they have a partnership with the UFC and ESPN. So you see them playing like anything that's, you know, involved with ESPN. And so they play literally every single UFC card. Maybe that's why that Hooters doesn't play the fights. I don't know. But, yeah, and I know that they, you know, there's times that they have played the UFC fights, but they don't always play them. Like, it's kind of, you can't really rely on them to always be playing the fights.
Yeah, they might be too close in vicinity for the UFC to be like, yeah, we ain't not going to do both of y'all.
Yeah, it might be something like that. I mean, there's a lot of bars around here. Most bars around my way, it's pretty much only Buffalo Wild Wings that you can watch the fights at. Like, I'm always calling around to the bars, like other sports bars, which is like probably like 3, 4, maybe 5, and all of them every time say that they're not playing the fights. It's like, it's pretty rare that like any other bars will even play the UFC fights besides Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, that's kind of sad though. See, that's a money grab there.
Yeah, but they don't even. I mean, it's sad for them. It ain't sad for me because I'm watching the fights. They're missing out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They missing the money grab.
That's the best. I mean, I don't even know if I want to say it's the best sport in the world. I would say it, but I don't even know if it's technically a sport. I mean, it's a fight game. I don't even know if I want to call it a sport, or else I'd say it's the best sport in the world. But they're missing out on the true fight game. So that's their own fault.
Yeah, that's just bad business. But, hey, it is what it is, dog.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we'll definitely be back next week to talk, you know, whoever's the interim champion by then. We'll be wanting to come back and recap that. You know, there's some other big cards that come up in the next couple of weeks, so we'll be wanting to chat about those as well. This is a really great show tonight. You know, I really enjoyed this back and forth. I feel like we got to a ton of different content tonight, 10 different topics, and this card's about to be, you know, a really great card. I think we're going to look back and say this was a really good card for the year 2021. So, you know, I think this will have shown to be one of the best cards of the year, I think. Even though I think the promo, you know, I think the UFC is even sleeping on this card a little bit. I think the fans are sleeping on it. I think a lot of people are sleeping on this card, but I think this is going to be exactly what they're saying, a sleeper card. You could sleep. I think it's just going to be a sleeper card, so that's fine. And if people look back and say, wow, that was one of the best cards of 2021, I didn't even realize it. But it's going to slip right under your feet, and it is what it is. So anybody who listens to our show, I appreciate y'all for listening. There's some other topics that are definitely at play that we'll talk about, you know, that in the coming weeks. Some other side topics, you know, we'll talk about. But, yeah, I almost wanted to put it on the closing thought, but I won't do it. I will add a thought that you said, Lee, before in the past shows, and I actually appreciate that you had said that. And this is aside from the fight game, but, you know, if anybody, if you want to get vaccinated or not, that's your choice. I'm going to put that out there. I know you said that before, and I respected that, and I feel like I should follow up. I should double down on that stance, because I feel like we agree on that. You know, I think that's definitely your choice. You know, what I'm seeing out here now is, you know, what I saw is that the state of New York is basically doing all but forcing people to get vaccinated by, like, making it so if you're not vaccinated, you can't go to pretty much any public place. And I think that's going to be a factor for Madison Square Garden, UFC Madison Square Garden in November. I definitely expect Dana White to pull that card from MSG and probably end up having it in Vegas. I think that's probably what's going to – or Florida. I feel like that's probably what Dana White's going to end up doing. When it happens, remember that you heard it here first. And, yeah, I just don't think that they're going to want to do that, where a lot of the fans – you know, there might be a lot of fans in attendance that don't want to get vaccinated. So what happens then? Dana White can't sell, you know, 10,000, you know, whatever, a couple thousand tickets, you know, thousands of seats are empty because those were people that didn't want to get vaccinated. Even some of the fighters don't want to get vaccinated. Michael Chandler came out and said that, you know, he won't be, if that's the case, you know, and they have to be vaccinated to fight, he won't be vaccinated by November 6th to be able to fight Justin Gaethje. So, you know, then that means Chandler won't be fighting. But either way, my whole point is it's coming to into one of my personal spaces, you know, within my circle and within my interest. The fact that it's dipping into the UFC world, it's frustrating to me that now it's like, okay, you're gonna rule fighters that they have to get vaccinated because you're going into states where they have to be vaccinated. And, you know, I just think for anybody listening or, you know, anybody out there, period, I definitely think that's your choice if you want to get vaccinated or not. If you do, I'm not there to argue it. If you don't, I'm also not there to argue it. That's fine. I think that's your own choice. So, yeah, I just want to close out on that and just make sure that that's understood.
Yeah, man. You know, once again, it is a personal decision. You know, if people want to do it, do it. If you don't. It's your life, it's your body. But at the same time, you know, sometimes we got to look out for not just ourselves, but for other people. Like he said, it's starting to creep into the world of sports now. The NFL has came out and said that if a player decides not to get vaccinated and they end up getting COVID, that they're going to get fined up to not to exceed $150,000. The NFL came out and said that if a game is canceled or forfeited, that there will be no game checks issued to those players that week. So it's starting to get serious, man. So once again, the vaccination is a personal decision. It's up to you. But at this time, still practice social distancing, wear your mask. I know I've been wearing mine here lately, especially with this Delta variant. But everybody take care. Enjoy the fights this weekend. As always, positive people with positive energy yield positive results. And we always like to end our show with a peace.